Hey y'all, this week's episode is sponsored by Yellow Veil Pictures. Following debuts at Panic Fest and Brooklyn Horror Fest, Rachel Kane's haunting sci-fi thriller Somnium is now available. Set in an experimental sleep clinic hidden deep within LA's outskirts, Somnium follows Gemma, played by Chloe Levine, an aspiring actress who undergoes dream manipulation therapy that promises confidence and clarity, but instead unearths something far more sinister. As her reality fragments, ambition gives way to hallucination, obsession, and madness. What begins as psychological therapy spirals into a nightmarish descent that blurs the lines between dreams, delusion, and identity. See what Morbidly Beautiful called an engaging, thought-provoking film that blends the beauty of dreams with the haunting terror of nightmares. And Film Threat prays for how it balances reality and dreams perfectly, making their collision all the more impactful. Somnium is now available on iTunes, Amazon, Google, and other major VOD outlets. Our other sponsor this week is Veil, a heart-stopping new novel from beloved author Jonathan Jans, in which our world is terrorized by an invisible evil. When high school teacher John Calhoun's family is abducted by these unseen monsters, he volunteers for an experimental treatment that may help lift the veil, allowing him to see the other side and possibly get his family back. Desperate to save his family, John enlists the help of some new friends, but with people continuing to vanish in broad daylight, hope may still be lost, because nothing can save you from what you can't see. Don't miss this buzzy, edge-of-your-seat new horror novel, on sale, just in time to haunt you this Halloween season. And finally, a word from our corporate overlords at Fangoria. Fangoria has been at it for over 40 years and is better than ever. This magazine is not only gorgeous, it's highly collectible and delivered right to your front door 4 times a year. Each issue filled to the brim with articles exploring every nook and cranny of genre filmmaking past, present, and future with all the most exciting journalists, filmmakers, and horror know-it-alls to guide the way, including little old me from time to time. This high-quality writing will only ever appear within the physical pages of the magazine, never online, so if you want to join in on the fun, you're going to need to subscribe, babies, and in order to do that, just head on over to Fangoria.com to sign up, and guess what, if you use the code KINKAST at checkout, you will save a whopping 25% off of your subscription. That's Fangoria.com, code KINKAST. Now on with the show.
Hi. My name is Stephen King.
The ice is gonna break!
Bedlam! Bedlam!
You guys wanna go see a dead body?
Well, sometimes that is better.
Hey everybody, Vespi here. I wanted to give a little intro to this one, since this is a little bit of a different format than we usually do over around these parts. We didn't have one guest for a long period of time, but we got two cast members from The Long Walk to chat with us. We have Mr. Ben Wang and we have Mr. Garrett Waring. Garrett plays Stebbins and Ben plays Olsen. If you're familiar with the books, you know who those characters are. We talked to them both individually. And we're going to kind of smash them up together because they're two shorter interviews. And we figured making a little bit of a Frankenstein episode was better than just giving you like one 15-minute episode here and another 30-minute episode there. So you're going to get a full-length KINKAST episode, but just with two smushed together long walkers. So I'm just going to let them roll. Hope you guys enjoy it. And I'll circle back around with you after.
All right. So let's start talking about some Stephen King stuff, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's a pleasure to chat with you, man. I'm a fan of the stuff that you've done so far. I was at the South By premiere of American Born Chinese and saw.
Oh, no way! Wow, yeah,
got That's to see OG. The audience reaction to that, and going, oh my god, who's this Ben Wang fella? He seems to know what he's doing. So I was really psyched to see you pop up in this one. Obviously I'm a big Stephen King nerd, so. This is one of my favorites of his books, and it's been one that I've been tracking for a long time. And, you know, I'm sure you know the long history it had to come to the big screen. Right. But I wanted to start by asking what your Stephen King origin story was. So that, you know, that can be, you know, essentially when you first clocked him as a presence in pop culture, what's the first thing that like kind of registered, like who is the Stephen King guy? It could be a book, a movie, a book cover, a miniseries. It could be anything.
Yeah. The first Stephen King thing that I ever remember seeing, it was The Shining. Mm-hmm. I saw The Shining. I was like 14. Mm-hmm. I saw it on a plane, which is on like the seat back. Uh-huh. I was probably too young to be Watch it. Well, I just remember it was because it was on the seat back, and it was an economy, and I was flying by myself in the middle seat, and there were two randos, and there's like in The Shining, it's like there's that scene with like the old lady like full frontal naked. And I was like, oh crap, what have I done?
And
So
now it just looks like you're pausing it on the nudity
yeah,
and
exactly. You can't sort of roll back from that
yeah,
one.
the dude sitting next to you going, all right, so all right, this kid's into
Yeah,
some interesting
he's like,
stuff.
this
Yeah.
kid's a cinephile. He's like, I you
Oh
know.
yeah.
Yeah,
He's
he's
either a cinephile or this is his chance to see some boobies. So yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's funny is I have a close friend who's also he's a big movie nerd, he's a big horror nerd, but he never really got into the Shining movie until his 30s, and it funnily enough it was watching it on an airplane where he's like, I was bored, I wanted to give it a shot because he felt left out of conversations not really liking that movie, and he's
Yeah.
like, and I watched it and for whatever reason it clicked, so maybe that's the secret to The Shining is to watch it in a crowded airplane.
In thin altitude, yeah,
Yeah.
in low oxygen environment.
What was your reaction? Well,
Well,
I
I thought it
mean,
was
not to the nudity. You can talk about that if you want, but
sure. Yeah,
you
it
know,
was
what was your
awesome.
reaction to the movie? Did you?
The movie was fantastic. It was my first Stephen King like adaptation. It was also my first Kubrick film. So it was two birds with one stone. Yeah, it. I mean, it, like, the movie's iconic for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first. Because actually, no, that wasn't my first Kubrick film. My first Kubrick film was Doctor Strangelove.
Oh, okay.
I saw that movie because like my high school or middle school history teacher threw it on as like an end to the like we're done like celebrate the end of the Cold War unit. He was like, watch Doctor Strangelove. He was a cool guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, people, teachers getting in trouble for showing like anything, and here's this, these days. Man, I'm old, so I remember when I was a kid, like since I was the movie guy, my English teacher like tasked me with bringing in a movie like after the final. You know, 'cause
Yeah.
you know, you take the finals and then there's if you have a cool teacher, you're not taking up like the 4 hour block for the finals. Like we were done in like an hour for the English final, so they wanted to like bring a movie, and I'll never forget this because she would have absolutely gotten fired if this had happened today, but I brought like a stack of movies that I liked. I'm like, Jaws was in there and Blazing Saddles was in there. And she was just like, have the people vote on it. And there was a cool kid in class. And like, this is the kid, he was like the football player. And you know, he was
What
the kid that
said
everybody
when?
liked. And he like walks in and he goes, oh man, you know, Blazing Saddles is dope. And so now everybody wanted to watch it. And we put it on and like, you know, that movie has the N-word in it like 47 times in the first 10 minutes.
I know. Yeah.
And I remember she was grading papers, the teacher, Miss Dan Cause, shout out to Miss Dan Cause. She was grading the papers and she was looking at it. She never looked up from the papers, but she was hearing this and I could just see her shaking her head as she was grading papers. And then about 10 minutes in, Slim Pickens says the N-word again for the 30th time. And
Right.
then she just goes, I really hate that word. And then goes back to grading the papers and let us finish the movie. So, you know, it's
Wow.
a bygone era, and it's an R-rated movie. It's not like, you know, it's a Jaws or somewhere. It's a PG, but it should be PG-13 or R, right? So is The Shining your favorite Stephen King thing, or do you have anything else that you've discovered over the years? I mean, The Long Walk can count if you want, but you know.
Long Walk is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with this movie and how it turned out. I mean Shawshank obviously is like all-timer. The It movies are some of my favorites. The first one especially. I think that was like the first movie I saw in New York City in a theater when I moved to New York City. It just came out. And it's fun because now I've gotten to the point where I've worked with a lot of the kids who are in that movie. Wyatt Olaf especially was in Karate Kid with me. Yeah, it's been super cool. What else?
Oh God, I mean there could be a billion
I mean,
Stand By
yeah.
Me, you know, like
Yeah,
all that stuff,
Stand By Me was a big, you probably know this from interviewing the other guys, but it was a big sort of inspiration for us for this film, or being like, we wanted this film to feel like sort of, I don't know, an R-rated Stand By Me, right? In the way that like Stand By Me is very character driven. It's
Yeah.
relationship driven. We felt that that's the kind of movie that we wanted to make on with The Long Walk too.
Yeah, it's a lot of walking and a lot of
Okay.
young people, young men in particular, bonding, you know. So I like I it's funny to point it out going there's lots of walking and talking, but you know, it really is it's kids on an adventure and you know, the stakes are slightly different there. I mean, you all see both of your groups see dead bodies, so I guess you could make that corollary, but it really is. I mean, you know, the thing that makes The Long Walk such a great story, and what I particularly love about the adaptation is that it really is more about bonding than the horror of the situation that they're in. I mean, that obviously hangs over everything, but the whole movie's built on a foundation of the chemistry that, you know, especially between the Musketeers. Can you talk a little bit about maybe building that chemistry? Because like I said, it is the kind of skeleton of the you know the story. And if that doesn't work, if you guys don't work as a unit, then like, you know, things kind of crumble. Did you feel the weight of that or did, you know, at all? Or was it just, you know, this is on the page, it works on the page and we can execute that?
I mean, it definitely worked on the page, but also it was, the environment that we made the film in, and
Right.
the environment that Francis set up for us made it like it, the relationship, the chemistry felt pretty automatic because, we were there, we were really walking, we were doing it in chronological order. Like we shot the whole film, scene by scene in the order that it's, written on the page. And so there's a really, stark sense of literalism to what we were doing because you didn't have to jump through a whole lot of mental loops as an actor to be like, I have to apply these sort of imaginary circumstances because most of the circumstances were real. It's like you just had to live in exactly what Francis was setting up for us on the day. And that way you can also, it's very easy to make sort of discoveries about your relationship in the moment and just, ride with those instincts because you know that they're real. You know that they apply to the actual situation, both that you're in, but also of the scene that you're doing. So it in a way, I have to sort of give it up to Francis because to me that's a very important job that the director has is for it to with the actors is to set up the environment that they're acting in. And the one that he set up for us made it very easy for us to make those relationships feel truthful and for those discoveries about how those relationships work to come very easily and naturally.
Right. Well, it sounds very, it's a, such a smart idea to shoot it in order, which is a luxury not a lot of, you know, films get to have, but I guess, you know, going out of your way and the difficulty of scheduling that, I'm sure, whatever the hell the hoops they had to jump through, I think it pays off. I mean, especially your character in particular, Hank, I think has one of the most brutal progressions of any of the Musketeers, right? Like you see the toll that the walk takes on him. You know, scene to scene, you know, because he's such a lively, boisterous character, and to see that spark slowly diminish over the walk, you know, I imagine that if you were shooting out of order, that would have been much more difficult for you as an actor, where you're going to be shooting a scene from, you know, towards the end of the movie at the beginning, and you know, like, so, you know, was that the help that I assume it was that you were
Yeah,
able to
totally.
just,
I mean,
yeah.
it was just so much easier to keep track of it. It was just all it was just like, what, how tired were you yesterday? Okay, now add a little more. But the challenge I found was that it was like, that was the mindset, right? And day one I went in, and I was like, day one, obviously totally fine, just walk like normal. Day two, you get a little more tired. Day three, you get a little more tired. But like when we like by like day 10, I was like, oh man, I think I ratcheted up too fast. 'Cause I was like, on day 10, you can see it in the movie, like pretty early on, like Hank gets really tired. And I was like, oh man, I'm already at like, like an 8 out of 10 on the tired scale, but I've got 20 more days. So I was like, did I like screw myself? But then I realized like there's actually something interesting about that. That's actually the thing that became the most interesting thing to explore for me. I get the opportunity to play a character who gets more tired than any, human has like to the brink of the human limit for what their body can endure. And it's like, that's interesting, right? It's not just about being really tired. It's about being maybe the most tired person on planet Earth.
Right.
And what does that look like? That's something that, you don't get a chance to see a lot in film. So I was
Right.
like, that's good actually that I'm at an 8 now, because I'll be at a 10 in another 3 days, and then I'll have to see what it's like when you push past that.
Yeah, what's beyond 10? Because there's the physical tiredness, but then there's the mental
Exactly.
breaks that happen, and that's kind of the, the reading the book, back in the day, it was that's seeing the characters that you love hit that point. That's when the tragedy really kind of struck. It wasn't like, oh, their feet hurt or their feet are bloody or whatever. That's all stuff you can relate to, but then you push past that. It's kind of like when a, I don't know, a grandparent like loses their,
Yeah.
their mental, facilities or
There's
whatever.
that
It's just
sense of
like,
there's no going back. You know that you
right.
can't go back.
Yeah, a nice night of sleep isn't going to fix what's happening right here. Can you talk a little bit about, what the average shot was? Does Francis, we talked about Kubrick earlier, is Francis somebody who shoots a lot of takes? Is he somebody that, knows what he wants, gets it instantly? I mean, obviously you guys are shooting out in the world, which has its own, complications, but what's the average shot like in, like say a walk and talk, scene here? Is it
Honestly,
something you shoot a lot
honestly,
or not? Yeah.
dude, I don't remember.
Really? Well, that's so
I was
perfect.
so tired every single night. I was just like,
You had to have gotten to a point where you're like, my dude, we got this. I don't need to walk another half a mile for this take here.
honestly, every like I can't. I don't remember. All I remember is was walking. All I remember is waking up, getting into the van. And then the hotel and the room service steak sirloin that I ate every single night right before I went to bed at about 8:15 p.m. So
Did they at least like did wardrobe give you guys comfy shoes? Like they had to have prepared you for the
yeah,
stuff you were
I mean
doing.
as comfy as it can be. I mean I was wearing Converse, so I felt like one kid. Oh man, there's this one kid who his wardrobe was he was wearing rain boots.
Oof.
Yeah, and like he wasn't one of the characters that died early. He lasted a long time.
Yeah, he's got to be. I don't want to know what he's pouring out of those things at the end of the night.
No, there were definitely some like foot injuries along the way that we had to
Yeah,
treat.
Converse doesn't have a lot of padding. I was a Converse guy for a long time, and then
Yeah, I love it.
now I wear old man sneakers because I'm like, I don't give a shit. I just need to be
Exactly.
comfortable.
Everybody, if you were going on the long walk, you should take your New Balances, and that's
Get those orthopedics on. Yeah,
get your Dr. Scholl's, slip them in, man.
those gel
No
inserts.
shame on
Yeah.
the long walk.
I know that this is probably the most like obvious question, but I'm, did you guys actually track how long you walked, how much walking you did during the shoot? Is
Yeah.
there somebody that like kept a record of that?
Well, I mean, we had phones,
Yeah.
like in the backpacks. Basically, just to track steps because there's no signal in Saskatchewan. So it was kind of fun to every night go home and like look in your phone and see how far you walked. I feel like I was averaging like 25,000 steps a day. So it would be somewhere between 20,000 and 30,000 steps a day. And at the end, I know Cooper and like the guys who walked all the way to the end, who get they were clocking close to 400 miles.
Jesus. Yeah.
I clocked a little bit over 300,
Wow.
which is
Wow.
crazy.
I mean, every day is a day at a hectic day at Disney World, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, but
That where
400
you just
miles,
keep.
that's like 400 miles is like LA to San Francisco,
Yeah.
you know?
Would yeah, I mean it's almost exactly, well, it's a little bit more I think, but it pretty much tracks with the length of the characters walk in the story,
Oh,
right? So
exactly. Yeah.
I don't
It's
know. It's so fascinating. I'm so glad that that you guys took the movie seriously. I'm so glad that it came out the way it did. Like, one of my big concerns as a fan of the story was that it was going to be toned down a little bit, and the whole point of it being like the Vietnam allegory and the angry young Stephen King who wrote it hated the draft and hated Vietnam. Like, the whole point was to be brutal and kind of show, what happens when you feed your young people into the war machine, right? And I'm so happy that you know, that you guys, you know, knocked it out of the park, that Francis, you know, took it seriously. And I'm very excited that you came and talked with us for a little bit on the show, man. I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, we were very like aware and also proud of the movie that we were making. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
It's a pleasure to chat with you guys. In fact, I was hoping that I would get the opportunity to nerd out with y'all. So this makes me happy.
Oh, I'm so glad. I know we chatted with you on the panel, and we met briefly backstage, and then we got a little chat with, which basically just turned into Mark Hamill holding court,
Mark doing his spiel, yeah,
for about 30 minutes after, and then we ran into you on the streets. You and Tut were out.
Oh yeah!
Partying.
Oh my gosh, that was
That's
great.
That's right.
Yeah.
Walking around Comic-Con, yeah.
The streets of the Gas Lamp District, late night at Comic-Con.
I have never had such a wild weekend in my life. I think it was 76 hours straight of just like interviews and panels and photo shoots and videos and meetings. It was the craziest weekend, and I'm grateful to have shared some of that with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being back with us then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't realize it at the time, but I did a little research. I'm a journalist, right? You're a Texas boy. I didn't know that.
I am. I'm from College Station, Texas. Are you from Texas as well?
I'm in Austin, so I know we're bitter rivals, a little bitter rivals.
I know, you have the A&M thing. So you live in Austin now?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so you're cool. you Aggies fan? You got the Aggies?
Yeah, I'm like a fourth generation Aggie. My grandparents met there. My parents met there. Their grandparents met there. It's a whole generational tree that I'm in of this Texas A&M family. But look, I got respect for UT. You get hook 'em horn, kick 'em and all that stuff. But yeah.
Very nice political answer.
And I'm unaffiliated. I'm an East Coast person, so I have no stake in this except advocating for peace between your warring tribes.
Peace needs to be made. That is a long-running, long-standing duel.
Well, you talked about wanting to nerd out. We should talk about the Stephen King of it all. Obviously, this is the King cast. I believe we got your King origin story when we had that round table thing. And I believe that audio is going to be going up this week, by the way. So if you're listening to this and haven't seen it, you can get the full audio of the Comic-Con panel and little rendezvous afterwards. I've been working on that, getting that ready. So we won't need to ask your origin story, but I do want to ask what your favorite Stephen King thing is. Like, do you have a favorite book, movie, story?
No. Not The Long Walk, right? We've
I mean you can if you want to be predictable, you can say that.
Yeah. Look, The Long Walk is fantastic, and I'm so grateful to be part of bringing this story to life, because obviously they've tried to make it since the 80s, and you know, they deemed it impossible. And so to be part of the cast that people remember and you know associate with these characters is an honor. I'm going to go a little bit left field here. Mm. I love Stephen King's Twitter.
All right.
You're nice. Okay.
And honestly, I've been following him forever on there. And I like to engage with like the TV shows and the films that he'll tweet about. And funny enough, he's a big fan of a TV show that I'm in called Manifest. Mm-hmm. And he's a big fan of Manifest. And so the fact that he knows who I am from that, but also to now be in The Long Walk is pretty cool. But there was this whole campaign for, you know, when Manifest got canceled after season 3, trying to get it renewed and bring it back for a fourth season. And Stephen King actually did a fair amount of tweeting for us and helped get us back on board for season 4. But you know, of course, the classic Stephen King stories like Misery and Carrie, I love. But I also dig on writing, because I'm a writer, and you know, hearing the way that he speaks about the way that he writes, and to not be afraid of the page, and to write a page a day, and you know, that the salvation, I guess, lies on the other end of that page. But see the way he writes. And the way he thinks about writing, I think, was very inspiring to me as a young horror writer as well. My fantasy is to kind of live the Stephen King life, you know, remote in the woods, and send your story out to the world, and just sit in your house in Maine and watch them unfold and turn into movies and TV shows and all that stuff. Yeah,
just be careful on your walks.
Yes,
yeah, always. You don't want to get lost in the woods, hit by a truck, or stalked by a rabid dog.
Yes.
It's all sorts of bad things can happen when you venture out into Stephen King country.
Yeah.
Garrett, so I don't think we've ever had anybody mention explicitly like his Twitter feed as a topic of conversation. But you're right, he advocates for the things he loves. He has
Yeah.
diverse interests, and sometimes he loves a show that you just don't expect that he would even watch. And I've had some other friends like you who are like actors, and one of them was on The 100. You guys ever watch that show?
Many years ago.
He was a big champion of that show too, and she was saying how everybody got worked up when Stephen King, they realized he was watching the show. It's like millions of people are watching this show, but everybody has a relationship to this guy. And so when he's watching, you just feel more like self-aware or self-conscious.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. To suddenly know that the work that you're making is being seen by people who you really respect. That's always one very affirming to me, but also nerve-wracking. And same with like people who will follow me on Instagram or Twitter. I'm like, I feel like now I'm posting for these people, right? Because I know that they'll see my things. Not saying that Stephen King follows me on Instagram, but to know that he watches Manifest and digs the show, that's something that I wouldn't expect him to watch. But you take the sci-fi elements of the show and kind of equate that to what he writes. And oh, also I'll take it back to The Mist. I really like The Mist. Specifically the film and Patrick Wilson, and that was one that caught my eye a while ago. Yeah,
Tom Jane, I think you mean, but I'll let it
Patrick
slip.
Wilson was, no, he was the lead of the Mist movie.
Tom Jane was the lead of The Mist. Patrick Wilson was in The Tall Grass, I think, was his Stephen King
What movie
movie.
did I watch then? Am I
I'm not
crazy?
sure. I'm not sure. I didn't want to. The Mist is the one where there's a mist and there's a bunch of tentacles and shit in the mist and they're all trapped in the grocery store.
No, are you thinking of In the Tall Grass?
I'm not sure. I am
Uh-oh.
losing my mind because if that wasn't Patrick Wilson, I am a lo please look it up.
In the Tall Grass, Patrick Wilson's in it, and he plays a dad, where his kid like runs in, like they pull over to the side of the road, and his kid runs into the tall grass, and they go in, and then like
That's like a.
time doesn't, they get lost in there, and time doesn't really matter anymore.
Oh, that sounds
And they
crazy.
find the big black stone, right? That's a Joe Hill, Stephen King
Yeah. Oh, I love
collaboration.
Joe Hill stuff too.
No,
Okay.
I can get it though. Like Tom Jane in that period of time, like he very much was rocking a Patrick Wilson I don't know,
Rugged handsomeness.
white dad
I don't know
guy.
what movie I saw then, but yeah, you can just cut all that. You cut all that. Oh,
No, well,
I wish you were
you've
right.
already gained so many points by bringing up On Writing as a touchstone for King stuff. Like, it doesn't matter. You can say all the wrong stuff from here on out, and everybody's still going to be like, all right, that dude's still a true blue
Thank you.
Stephen
Thank
King
you.
fan. So, but I think not to harp on the Twitter thing so much, but I think that when you bring up King's Twitter, most of the conversation goes around the politics side of it. Because he's very. I view him as like a blue collar lefty, right? So he's, which obviously, if you're going to write something like The Long Walk, that's kind of the origins of his politics on Twitter right now. He was very anti-war. He was a young Republican going into college, and then he started growing his hair out, and falling into the anti-war scene, and I think that really shaped his politics. But by the way, even though he's known as being very left-leaning, he still kind of has some moderate stances on a lot of things. But anyway, he definitely hates Trump. He hates all the right-leaning stuff right now. But the thing that I do love about his Twitter is exactly what you're talking about. Not only the support, but then he'll champion novelists. He'll champion random books. I started reading Charlie Houston because of his Twitter feed. It's like I've been turned on to a bunch of people, because he just consumes pop culture. He's a fan of the written word, of television, of movies. And but my favorite aspect is when he'll post random like pictures from like, oh, I'm watching this, and he posts a picture of his like TV, and you realize he has the same rat's nest of fucking wires behind the TV that I do. And I'm just like, Stephen King's just like us is what I'm getting at. So.
Yeah, it's nice to have a glimpse into like the kind of media that he engages with, that could even potentially inspire the stories that he tells.
We also have to mention the other thing he does with his Twitter, which is merciless dad jokes.
I well, yeah.
Are you ready for a couple here? I'm gonna
You have them pulled up?
I got them. I got some of them pulled up. There
He
are
has them screenshotted. He views them daily, I think.
Nice. There were daily affirmations for him.
Yes.
Why do ants not catch COVID? They have antibodies.
And he made this up, or this is a.
These are real. These
These
are
sounds. That
real.
one isn't one I'd heard before.
Here's
Yeah.
one, Stephen King. I saw toast in a cage at the zoo. The sign said bread in captivity.
Unfortunately, I am here for
We
that.
need to add a little rim shot drum
Yeah.
sound effect here.
Ba-boom.
Let's see. The wedding was so beautiful, Stephen King writes, that even the cake was in tears.
Tiered cake. Okay.
Ah.
You know, they're called dad jokes. These are actually writer jokes because he's using homonyms and you know, language to kind of make his puns. What's that?
I said nice use of the word homonym.
Yeah, we like to pull out a little vocabulary action here in
Showing off that
the
English degree, Brez.
KingCast.
I
But
don't know if you have an English degree.
I do, yeah. But
But there
no,
you go.
it's
I you look like you'd have an English degree,
I
just as
do.
I look like somebody who never went to college.
Well, what has being has been, being in a Stephen King story, like, has it led you to want to do more? Is there you said you want to
Oh.
write, but like, is there another performance, another character, even if it's something that's been put on the screen before, where you're like, actually, I would love to play that part?
God, that's a great question. I auditioned for It way back in the day, and there was actually the same casting director as The Long Walk, actually, like 12 years ago, believe it or not. It comes to mind. I'm suddenly blanking on other cool Stephen King world roles.
Who
Does
did you
anybody?
audition for? You would have been with it. That's about 9 years ago. So you would have been
What's his name? Bill? Not Billy.
Bill.
Bill? Yeah, Bill. Yeah, Bill.
I could see that for sure. Yeah.
I think something along the lines of like I want to play monsters. I want to be the dude in the creature suit, so the idea of playing something like Pennywise would be so cool to me. And then I want to be in the world of Carrie just because I love it so much, but obviously Carrie's about Carrie.
You can
And
be Margaret White. You just put on a wig. Yeah, I
yeah,
think you can
that'd be great.
pull it off.
I got some fan casting for you. Eric,
Please.
you tell me what you think. I don't know if you've read this book, Garrett, but I could see you in the dark half, right? Because you've got these longings to be a writer. You look good in suspenders. You could pull off the English teacher
Ooh, wait,
vibe.
sounds like a great role. What is
Do you
this?
know the dark half? So this the
Oh.
dark half is what's the character's name again, Eric?
It's Tad is
Tad Bowman.
Tad Bowman's the main guy, and then the dark half is
Richard Stark?
Yeah, Stark, but it's essentially him.
George
The
Stark. It's George
George
Stark.
Stark, yeah, because he's dealing with, funnily enough, the Richard Bachman of it
Yeah,
all.
that's what I was
Yeah,
thinking of.
yeah.
So it's about
But
this
yeah.
young guy. He's a young father, college professor, writer. He writes these sort of literary books that don't sell, but he makes a lot of money on the side writing this sort of really violent crime fiction. And then when he retires his pseudonym, the pseudonym actually is this entity that comes to life and then starts trying to take over his life.
Oh,
So
and this has not been adapted yet, I'm
it
assuming.
has, yeah. It was done in the late 80s or early
Yeah,
90s.
George Romero made a he couldn't get The Long Walk made, but he got this made with Timothy Hutton. Is that
Timothy
right?
Hutton played the part, and
Oh,
Amy Madigan was the wife. But it's dual casting because he's a twin, essentially. You get to play the light and the dark. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde story.
absolutely. Maybe we bring it back and I'll play this guy for you.
Let's
Well,
do
here
it.
Here's where my mind went, and not to plan your career. You're going to have to put a little years on, so you probably won't be able to do this for another 10, 15, 20 years.
Judd Crandall.
Judd Crandall, I ho hope you like some Pet
That's
Semataries.
the old guy from Pet Sematary.
I do.
No, I'm thinking, I mean, having met you, you're a tall, handsome,
Well, thank
charming, charismatic guy. I think that you could be a very good Randall Flagg. You need
you.
somebody who has the smile that can like pull in the people. Randall Flagg being the villain of The Stand and multiple. He's like one of the top king villains. So when you said you wanted to play a king bad guy, I was like, well, here's like probably the tip top of the mountain for king bad guys is Randall Flagg, who is a villain across the Stephen King multiverse. So he's the bad guy in multiple stories. So.
Oh, I love this idea. I'm honored. You know, I consider myself a kind, easygoing guy. And I do feel attracted to these kind of villainous roles for whatever reason. Stevens kind of being adjacent to that. And I wonder what that says about me, but playing another Stephen King antagonist sounds like a match made in hell.
But you've got the Texas in you too. Yep. I think Randall Flagg needs that because he's got him in boots and walking the lonely roads, and that sort of rugged individualism is an important part of that character. Plus the charisma, plus the dashing good looks. That's always a good quality.
I'm telling you, man, buddy, you know, when you have, if you have a couple of long flights coming up, load up The Stand audiobook or get a copy of it. It's 1,000-page tome. It's one of his longest books, if not the long, I think it is his longest when you do the, it is like right underneath it or tied for the Stand's page count. But then he did like an extra long version of The Stand in the early 90s.
I'm going to look push at it up. Dark half. Maybe I'll take my JT Molnar pen out and do the edit for the screen.
Oh, that'd be nice.
There you go.
You know, write your own destiny. Well, you mentioned Stebbin. So we can nerd out about Stephen King, and I realize the time's ticking away on us. And I want to talk about the role of Stebbins and kind of, you know, it's an interesting one in the book because he's the quiet kid in the back, right? When you first meet him, and he doesn't really say much. When he does, you know, you kind of realize why he's playing the game. Can you talk a little bit about what about Stebbins as a character kind of grabbed you as an actor? What was your way into this guy?
Yeah, you know, initially, the casting director, Rich D'Elia, sent an audition for me for Barkovich. And he was like, look, this is what, you know, we initially see you as, but who do you resonate with most? Who would you like to play? And so when I read the script, Stebbins stuck out to me immediately. And very luckily, I was able to get an audition for that. And, you know, the rest is history. But when I read the book before meeting with Francis for our initial kind of like callback, I loved getting to see this kind of like deeper level of Stebbins in the book and this mysterious guy, and, you know, not necessarily understanding why he is the way he is. And he's sitting in the pine tree at the beginning of the walk when they're calling out the numbers and stuff. And everybody's, you know, well, he doesn't say a lot. Everybody's talking about Stebbins, right? This guy, the purple pants in the background. And let me say to the Stephen King fans that are listening now, I petitioned for the purple pants. They were very cool. I wanted to wear them. And I told Francis, and we ended up agreeing that it wasn't of the time, and it would stand out too much if I wore these purple pants. Mm-hmm. And I also I petitioned for the moccasins as well in the movie. And those did not land. But what did land were the Converse that hung off my backpack. Mm-hmm. We got to keep that. But what attracted me to Stebbins was this kind of like solitary lone wolf guy and trying to justify his behavior. So of course, when you find out that Stebbins is the major's son, every action that he's made throughout the course of the walk suddenly makes sense, because everything is justified by the fact that he has to meet his father. He has to get this wish come true. And so the idea of being withheld and being with your walls up came from a place not of of an antagonistic nature, but more from a place of self-preservation. Because, you know, he knows that in order to win this walk, which he will do, he has to run down every other boy on this walk. So if he gets close to them, he will see in the book 99 other boys who he's come to know and come to like fall before him. And that would be harder than keeping your walls up the whole time and not getting to know these boys. But I think what JT and Francis both adapted masterfully was this sense of humanity that they gave Stebbins within the movie. Because while you can go in with your walls up, you begin to see these walls falter and crack as he begins to kind of enjoy the boy's company on this walk. And he begins to understand that this is the only company he'll have left in his lifetime. So when we see the Tressler character hold up that radio and everybody's shouting, fuck the long walk, fuck the major, this smile happens in that moment for Stebbins. And we begin to see this tough exterior crack. And he begins to kind of understand that maybe this walk isn't what he anticipated it being or built it up to be in his head this whole time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love the thought you've put into this, even the moments maybe where you're not the center of the attention in the story, and you've got all these characters, and there's always something going on the periphery, anywhere your eye can go, because we're, as the audience members, kind of thrust into the walk ourselves. We're walking along with you, even though we're just sitting there munching on popcorn. But the heart that you've put into this and the thought you've put into it is really wonderful. So
Thank you.
congratulations on
But it's not just me. It's every boy on that set.
it.
We all had our physicality and our inner monologues and everything going on behind the scenes as well. So it does make it more of an engaging watch because you're not just watching boys walk. You're watching everything happening around the story of getting to know these boys along this walk. And while it is a brutal story, I think the heart of it is the camaraderie and this brotherhood, and it elevates the thriller genre, I think, because it gives heart to these boys.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it all was all guys shooting this. I assume there were some women on the crew or something, but there's hardly a woman in the cast.
Yeah.
It's all about
Jane
men and
Greer,
boys.
sole woman in this cast. Except for the army folks on the some of the tanks.
There were some women on the tanks.
Yeah.
But what was it like? Do you think that changed the dynamic being all guys?
I mean,
Behind the scenes.
you throw 50 sweaty, hot, tired boys on a walk for 2 months. Yeah, I think there's going to be a certain dynamic that comes from that. Honestly, man, like I'm so grateful for the time that I shared with those boys and getting to know them, not only as the actors they are, but behind the scenes as well. And I taught the boy who plays Art Baker, Tut Nuant. I taught him how to swim.
Oh, really?
I taught him how to swim. I saw the first time that man went underwater, and it was so beautiful to like share that life moment with him. And above making this movie, above being on set and putting this out in the world, it is those experiences that allow me to reflect on this in such a positive way and really take a lot from this experience outside of filming.
Were you a tough teacher? Because I just imagine you and
Put.
Tut, who we met at Comic Con, who was super incredibly nice. I just imagine I see in my mind those videos of like the teachers teaching like toddlers how to swim, where they just throw them into the pool and then see
What Garrett means is by teaching him how to swim, he meant he pushed him off a bridge.
No, real life. I'm a gentleman. I taught scuba diving during COVID, actually. So
All right.
being nature comes naturally to me, and I love the ocean so much. And so, I mean, we weren't in the ocean; we were in Manitoba, but we were in the Fairmont Winnipeg's pool. And I was a very gentle teacher, and we started slow, and by the end, we were holding our breath underwater together. It was really cool.
Great.
Nice.
That's
I do want to know if you what your relationship to the book is. Did you read the book before going into the movie, or did you just go with the script?
Yeah, I read the book 3 times before stepping on the set. I think collecting as much information about this world as I could was helpful for me because in the screenplay you're only given an hour and a half, 2 hours to build out this world. But what you get from the book is the world building that kind of is limitless, and also the inner monologue of Garrity, but also what you can relay what Garrity's thinking and also like apply that to your character as well. So I read that book front to back many times. I broke it all down, took everything I could from Stebbins, and also a keen-eyed viewer will realize that Stebbins is not just Stebbins from the movie. He's also Scram. And so they took elements of Scram, they gave the wife to Olsen, and then they gave the kind of like brooding physicality and sickness to Stebbins.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because that's one of my favorite things about the novel is you have this guy who is like everybody's like, oh, that's the front runner, that's the guy people are betting on it, they're going to bet on that guy, and by all accounts he should have won. But the thing is you don't know. You might get a cramp, you might catch pneumonia. It's like anything can happen. There's that little bit of chance, and that's what, maybe I guess in this universe makes watching the long walk exciting, for the people who
It's
are watching.
unexpected, and it catches you off guard. And so, when that initial sniffle starts to happen for Sevens, the audience knows what's coming. But he has a line. I've got a line in the film where I'm like, I never get sick, and my body decides to do it during this exact window of days, like it's some cruel joke. And maybe that's what the long walk is, some cruel joke, and it's some Mr. Beast challenge of fate.
Mr. Beast's Challenge of Fate is a ominous an ominous prospect to face.
Yeah, I think Lionsgate's listening now. They're typing up furiously. They know how they're gonna advertise this to Gen Alpha now. So you got it.
I will say, if Mr. Beast does a walking challenge and I'm not a part of it, I'm gonna be pissed.
You got to get in there for that. What, Beastable or Crunchable or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beastables. They're called Feastables, but yeah.
Feastables.
My son's super.
I think. Wait a minute. They're called Feastables, and Beast was right there. They didn't call it Beastable.
Beastables. I don't know.
I mean, listen, that dude doesn't need any business advice from me. But you know, maybe the next line should have his, you know, his name in it. That's all I'm saying. Yep. One thing that I want to end on, or yeah, as we're getting towards the end here, talk about is. As an actor, like, I'm very curious. This is something I brought up with Ben earlier today. You know, I know that you guys shot mostly in order, if not completely in order, right? That must have been a huge help for you in kind of showing the toll that The Long Walk has on your character throughout. But, you know, how much thought did you put into, like, at what point he starts to get fatigued? At what point or do you change your walk? Do you change your gait? Do you, like, you know, how much thought did you put into that? And did you have, like, markers on what scenes you knew you needed to start hitting those moments and all that?
This question, thank you for asking this.
You're welcome.
I put so much work into the physicality, into the sickness, mm-hmm. and in companionship with Doug Morrow, our fantastic effects makeup designer, we kind of worked together on, okay, so this is when the sniffle starts to happen. This is when the eyes begin to droop. This is when the sneezes start to happen. This is when the limp starts to happen. And this is when your eyes become yellow and red. We were wearing, like, discolored contacts for, like, the last three, like, act of the film, if you look closely.
Cool.
With the makeup artist, I was able to kind of, like, work also with the costumes team to kind of show this progression. And I'm not sure if you can tell, but, like, in the beginning, I looked like a baby-faced, you know, shaved boy. Towards the end, I got a beard. And we lose weight, if you can tell, throughout the film as well. Because we shot chronologically, you can see all of these changes happening. But yeah, so I had basically in my script these little tabs. And it's like, okay, so you're going to do sniffles here. You're going to start sneezes here, coughs here. And, you know, this is when you rip off the hanky from your shirt and you use it as a rag. And then also working with, like, okay, when your shoulders start to droop and when you... Your knees start to give out. And I remember, like, because we shot chronologically, I was like, today I'm going to do a limp every eighth step, tomorrow every seventh step, every sixth step. And then eventually it's every step I'm limping, every step I'm sniffling, right? And eventually you work backwards, and then eventually you get to you know, that final scene when it's just, you know, the all is lost moment and everything is given up. But I want to shout out Ben Wong specifically about, like, his gait and his physicality, because that was so impressive to watch. And I actually learned from him on the days, you know, how I observed him and how he was working, and helped me do what I was doing as well. Yeah. But we had these, like, makeup stage breakdowns that I have pictures of, actually. I'm sure I'll post them one day. But it was a team effort, I'll say.
Great. Anthony, you got any final thoughts or questions before we let poor Garrett go here?
No, well, I'm happy to share.
You know, the only thing I want to know is, do you think that there was a bond formed between you and the other actors? You mentioned the friendships at the time, and sometimes you talk to actors and they'll say, you know, we worked on this movie for a couple of months together and it was like being at camp. And then you go away, you go back to your ordinary life, and you lose touch. And I wondered, is this the kind of movie you think where years from now you'll still feel that connection, that bond to the other actors?
It's a very special question. I don't think that I will ever forget what we shared on that set. You know, you take a normal production and, you know, sure, you have hard days, but it's not like you have a hard day every day. Mm-hmm. And we had hard days every day, and beautiful days too. But, like, you know, we were trauma bonded there by the end, because it was rough. It was hard. And I'm grateful to have shared that experience with the boys that I shared it with. They're talented, kind, and hardworking boys. And yes, there is a bond that was formed, and how could it not have formed, given the nature of how we were working, but also the material that we were working on. It was intense, it was meaningful, it was impactful. And at the end of the day, for me, it was about brotherhood and appreciating what you have while you have it. And sure, our dynamic will never exist in the way that it did during those 2.5 months in Manitoba. But what I carry with me is the memories and the feelings that I have from these experiences that I got to share with them. And I'm just damn grateful that we get to share this film with the world and that people are responding so positively to it. It affirms the work that we did up there, but it also inspires me to keep doing hard things because on the other end of that hard thing can be a very beautiful experience.
Well said.
Wonderfully said. Well, Garrett, thank you so much. It was
Yeah.
a pleasure chatting with you. You get bored and you want to talk about, in on writing in depth, feel free to give us a call. We'd love to have you on.
We'll catch you down the road, Garrett.
Know what I'll do is I'm gonna do an adaptation of The Dark Half, and then
Okay.
we'll chat about that for when it's going to Comic-Con. Okay.
Let's do
Wonderful.
it.
Wonderful. If we don't get a set visit, I'm going to be very upset with you.
Great. We do an
Set
honest.
visit. I think we should get a producing credit.
Yeah,
If we don't get paid millions of dollars, you are dead to us, Garrett. So.
Okay, I'll
He's like, gotta go.
Thanks,
Gotta
man.
go.
Many thanks to Ben Wang and Garrett Waring for chatting with us. The Long Walk is out this weekend, y'all. Go see it. It's fucking good. Bring some tissues. Trust me. As for me, I'm off to check out the goings-on over at Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando with the fiance. But I wanted to tease a little something about the next episode you are going to hear. Our next guest is one of the stars of one of the biggest Stephen King movies of all time. We recorded it today, had a very fun time with this person. I think y'all are going to dig it. Look for that to drop Wednesday after next. And in the meantime, here's your regular reminder that the best way to support the show and get access to a ton of bonus episodes is to sign up for the KingCast Patreon over at patreon.com/thekingcast. The second best way to support the show is to share it with your friends, your loved ones, your distant relations, anybody that you think would dig the show. Make a mention, tell them to sign up, listen to a few episodes, see if it's their thing. Talk about us on social media, rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice. All that stuff helps. So, yeah, I think that's all the housekeeping I got for you. I'm going to go get some sleep, motherfuckers. Until next time, adios, folks. The KingCast is hosted by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Anthony Bresnikan. The show is produced by myself, as well as Abby Goel and Tara Ansley, and is distributed by the Fangoria Podcast Network. Daniel Danger is our art director, and the show was created by me, the late, great Scott Wampler.